and the alert ship was skipping from sea to sea and was straining very badly. And they went forward and waved the lantern, and the steamer paid out more hawser. When they arrived in Delaware Breakwater, the steamer cast off the hawser, and the alert ship called it in. And that's the end.
How did they get that ship back?
I think some government boat, bring it back.
You'd
like to hear about Dr. George.
Well,
okay.
I indeed I would. You go right ahead. Where does he live?
In Chatham, at one time, there were several men named George Eldridge, namely George N.C. Eldridge, who was my father. George M, George H, George C, George K, and George W, who was called hydrographer or chart George. George W, when he was a young man, hired a vessel and crew to take soundings from Boston to New York for the purpose of making a navigational chart. When through sounding, he laid this chart on brown paper and took it to Washington and walked into the hydrographer's office with the chart under his arm. One man in the office said to another, "I wonder what this hayseed wants," and asked Mr. Eldridge what they could do for him. So he unrolled the chart and laid it out on the table and said, "Gentlemen, here is the chart. If followed, will take you from Boston to New York, and you won't get ashore." They accepted his chart and sent him home in a Pullman car. Mr. Eldridge had a small dog, which he trained to jump over his cane. Roll over, and when asked what the Methodists do when they go to church, he would cover his eyes with his paws and whine. Mr. Eldridge played the violin and often furnished the music at revival meetings. After his death, his son, who lived in Vineyard Haven, took over his work, making charts and guidebooks. I have some of his old charts in my possession. Mr. Eldridge's home was on Old Harbor Road, which is now owned and occupied by Mrs. Roland Snow. This shop. This shop was situated on. Would you like to hear about Perry's Blacksmith Shop?
Yeah.
Okay. This shop was situated on the corner of where the Chatham Town offices now stand, and at one time called Sam Higgins's Corner. Mr. Perry was an expert in making fishermen's anchors, clam holes, and quahog rigs. He was a member of the Methodist Church, also sang in the choir. When working the bellows of the forge, he was always singing hymns. Many retired sea captains gathered there and related stories of bygone days. In the shop was a tub filled with water where we dipped the red-hot iron to cool it. One time I was in this shop with some other boys. Most of us had freckles on our faces, and he told us we could get rid of them if we washed them with the water in the tub. We tried it, but with no results. I'd like to hear about Joe Smalley. Joe Smalley lived in the corner of Seaview and Main Street. He owned a bathhouse on the outer beach opposite Howard Street. He had a small rowboat which he used in transporting summer visitors, preferably ladies. He never charged any fee for transportation and use of the bathhouse. He was always on hand to distribute handbills when a traveling show came to town, and for this service he received a free ticket to the show. He sat in the front row, and some actors of the show would always crack some joke about him.
Now, wait a minute. What is this story you're going to tell?
Now, this story about the Barton team loaded with brimstone.
Good.
This Barton team came ashore on the beach below the old Monomoy life-saving station. On a moonlight night and stark calm, when she ran ashore, the station's men heard shouting and making distress signals by burning some rags soaked in oil. The water at this time was very deep close to the shore, and the ship was head on to the beach with a jibboom well out over the beach. When the station crew arrived on the scene, a fox terrier ran out on the jibboom and jumped out on the beach, and the crew followed. The captain of the ship gave the dog to one of the station crew. Later, this vessel was stripped of sails and rigging and sold at public auction. A few years ago, George Goodspeed, coming home from bass fishing, ran into the stern post of this vessel, which was dry at low water. Story about Uncle Andrew and his store?
Yeah.
Going through Uncle Andrew's store was a feat of navigation. It looked like some ship had dumped some of the cargo and someone had mixed it up, leaving a narrow path through it. He kept many things for sale, and he knew where to find it. The following are some of the things he sold. Paint and oils, oil clothes, rope, twine, pipes and tobacco, salt pork, coffee, cheese, jackknives, fish hooks, and an assortment of penny candy. He kept a bunch of bananas hung on a beam. These bananas, at that time, sold for 2 for 5 cents. The candy was displayed in open boxes on the counter behind the seat where the loafers sat. I say loafers because people at that time, the name applied to people that spent their leisure time in places like Uncle Andrew. When I was a young man, I spent a lot of spare time in the store. In winter, there would be men sitting on the bench behind the stove, whittling. One man I remember was quite a whittler. His shaving was very fine and curly. Some fishermen making lobster plugs for the coming lobster season, others telling yarns about bygone days. Often Uncle Andrew would dust off the stove with his red bandana handkerchief, then his boots, and then wipe his face with it. He never spoke, but held an unlighted cigar in his mouth the most of the day. Under the stairway, where we worked the paint out of his brushes, for many years the paint was 8 inches thick, and the edges were all colors of the rainbow. After his death, this store was operated by Captain Smith and later sold and is now used as a dwelling house.
Tell me Uncle Andrew's name.
His name was Andrew Hardy.
Andrew Harrison.
Grandfather was the General Hardy company up.
Oh, and where was the store?
Well, he was down right down the opposite the, right down on Main Street here.
Is that near a hallway street?
You know where Brady Mel lived and this woman up here has bought the old-fashioned house? You know where Mrs. Fisher Elders is right there?
Yeah.
She was on this side.
Oh, yeah.
White house.
And that was the store. And here. Well, was there any connection between Uncle Ben and Uncle Andrew?
Well, they were brothers.
Well, they were brothers.
Sounds
good.
Beginning from the site of the old Monomoy life-saving station and running south to 1/4 mile north of Monomoy Point Lighthouse was a ridge of sand dunes and covered in beach grass. On the east side of this ridge and at the foot was the one time the ocean, high water mark. The ship Emperor's hull was a fortune in copper ingot lies here for anyone who wishes to dig it out. When this ship came ashore about 150 years ago, a few men in Chatham salvaged a very small part of the cargo, and before they could salvage it anymore, the ship, being very heavy, sank quickly, and the beach made out and covered her up completely. Two men in Chatham built their houses on Silverleaf Avenue on the money received from selling their copper. I was talking with Bud Walker about a year before his death, and he told me he was in hopes he would live to see the beach wash away and expose the ship's hull. The beach is washing away fast, and probably sometime in the future expose the hull. That's true story. This is the story about the tragedy at Pittsfield Bar. This is the story told to me by Mr. Howley. Many years ago, a ship with a cargo of wine ran ashore at Pickettville Bars in a northeast storm and went to pieces and all hands lost. This was in the winter time and very cold. The wine came ashore and about 20 men, when hearing about this wreck, came to the shore and opened some of the casks and drank what they wanted and started for home. And when they came to the woods, it began to snow, and the wine began to take effect. And they lay down in the woods and went to sleep. And the next morning, they were found frozen to death. And that was a true story that he told me. It happened too many years ago. Well, I attended this story traveling home, but after I get in the story, it'll probably be very interesting to you. This was a boarding house that was owned and operated by Captain Small, who made many voyages around the world. And when he retired, he operated this boarding house, which catered to traveling sailormen. At that time, it was called Drummond. Later, this house was named Monomoy Inn, and at the present time, named Cranberry Inn. So this is a story told to me by his son, who sailed with him on some of his voyages. One time before leaving San Francisco for New York, Captain Small told another captain he would race his ship to New York, the stakes to be a new soot hat. They agreed and started together. Sometime later, Captain Small lost sight of the other ship, and after rounding Cape Horn and when going through the Straits of Magellan, they became becalmed, and cannibals in canoes from one of the islands nearby boarded the ship and began to inspect her. The hair of these men were dyed red, blue, purple, and orange, and bands of gold around their ankles and arms. Captain Small's wife and small baby were on deck, sitting on a bench under an awning near the after companionway, when two of the cannibals were making signals to each other as if they would like to eat the baby. Captain Small told his wife to take the baby and go below, and then he told the mate and the crew, try and drive the cannibals off the ship. They started in with belaying pins and finally drove them off. They dove like ducks and manned the canoes and paddled back to the island. Later, about 20 canoes manned by the cannibals were approaching the ship, and when quite close, began to throw stick pots and spears aboard the ship. Before they were near enough to board her, the wind came and filled the ship's sails, and they left the cannibals behind. The other ship was never heard from, and was thought possible the ship became becalmed in the Straits, and the cannibals boarded her and captured the crew and the ship. That's a true story.
That's a story about Uncle John.
Yes, I would. This is a story about Uncle John, who lived on Main Street, a brother of Barney Gould, the man who pushed his wheelbarrow to Boston from Chatham. He often came to Uncle Andrew's store and in a short time went to sleep on the bench behind the stove or sometimes part of the way down in the pork barrel. And in summer on the bench out on the piazza. When Perry was lost on one of his trips to the North Pole, several men in the store were debating where he might be. Uncle John was asleep at the time, and they woke him up and asked him where he thought he was. And Uncle John said, "Give me a piece of chalk, and I'll tell you." So he kneeled on the floor, and with the chalk, he made two dots on the floor, and said, "Here is..." North Pole, and here is Perry, dead, dead in hell. That's what he said. He lived at one time on Monomoy Point, and one day he went gunning to Joe Mell. That night, just before going to bed, Uncle John put some wet gun shells on the back of the stove to dry. So Joe said, "You're not going to leave them there all night, are you, Uncle John?" Joe was to sleep in the upper bunk and Uncle John in the lower. And Uncle John said, "If those shells go off in the night, Joe, I'll be up and see you." This is a story. How did it? This ship ran aground on the outer bar 1.5 miles south of the old Chatham Lifesaving Station in thick fog. A strong easterly wind and heavy surf. Part of the cargo was thrown overboard to lighten her, and many cases of baby brand condensed milk, Maine sardines, gallon cans of preserved Maine apples, several barrels of laundry starch, and several barrels of advertising literature of summer hotels in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Citizens of Chatham at this time were at the annual town meeting when the steamer blew several prolonged blasts on her siren and was recognized as a distress signal. And several men left the meeting and went to the beach, and when they arrived there, cases of milk and sardines and apples had been washed ashore and smashed by the heavy surf. And the contents were rolling over and over in the undertow, and men with dip nets were picking up the cans and using pipes for recovering the full cases. Later, salvagers recovered boat anchors, mushrooms, and shots of chain from the bottom. After the ship was floated, later these goods were sold at Port Augusta.
Do you remember when that was?
I was down on the beach to that.
When was that? Well, the 1892.
Story about Klondike Frank.
What?
The first gun I ever shot was a double-barrel, fresh-loaded 10-gauge Fox shotgun belonging to Frank. He at one time was mate on a Metropolitan police boat named the Black Pearl with his brother-in-law as captain. He went to the Klondike in the Gold Strike and they passed with a party from Brockton there. And they bought a small steamer in Seattle and fitted her out there and went up the Yukon a piece when bad weather forced them to abandon the steamer, and he worked for a man who struck gold and worked until he had enough money to pay his way home. When he got home, he built a shanty on Inman Point, Monomoy, and went fishing and scalloping in the winter and eating in summer, and lived there for many years. Later, he built a house on School Street and lived there until his death. There is a story he told me about the time he was watching on the side of a mountain pass at a safe distance from Bodley River when the ice was breaking up and the freshening packet was pushing the ice down the river, and when coming to a narrow place and building up pressure, it would toss huge cakes of ice 6 feet thick and a light green in color high in the air and turn them over and over, and rushing down the river with a thunderous roar which could be heard for miles. After this was over, the original river bed would be dry and a new river formed. He said this was a very inspiring scene. He lived on Monomoy for many years, and he wrote a poem entitled Monomoy. And the following is the poem. Monomoy. On a desolate beach where the seagulls screech and the broad Atlantic rolls, while the sand dunes rise and the racing tides rush madly across the shoals, while the shifting sands by some magical hands have fashioned this curious place, where strange life salts leap a warm hulk and treacherous currents break. Just off the shore, while the tides rip roar and a lightship rides the deep, while waterfowl's feet on mussels and weeds and crushed fishes eat. When the night is dark and the heron stalks the minnows along the creek, and the beacon lights illumine the night by the village quietly street. While the fisher folk dwell and their faces tell the story of toil and help, and children play with banners gay fashioned from drifting kelp. A Coast Guard crew in uniform blue patrol the sandy waste, while the helpless ships on the treacherous rift abet their cruel fate. It's a quaint old place, but I will haste and drink of this danger or joy, and away from this world, of this troubled world, find solace and only one. There you are.